Welcome to Season 2 of EdTech Insiders, where we talk to the most interesting thought leaders, founders, entrepreneurs, educators, and investors driving the future of education technology. I'm your host, Alex Sarlin, an EdTech veteran with over 10 years of experience at top EdTech companies. Welcome to Season 2 of EdTech Insiders, where we talk to the most interesting thought leaders, founders, entrepreneurs, educators, and investors driving the future of education technology. I'm your host, Alex Sarlin, an EdTech veteran with over 10 years of experience at top EdTech companies. Lisa John has a long career at the heights of EdTech. She was most recently the head of remote learning at Facebook, after 4 years as a senior director of product at New York's Flatiron School, a leading bootcamp provider, and 6 years at Google, where she was a product manager and a lead for education for Google Hangouts. Joe Burgess was the first hire at Flatiron School and worked up to the VP of Education, where he led education product and delivery teams across four disciplines, online and in Flatiron's 8 campuses. Together, they are the co-founders of Ribbon Education, which is building software to help student-facing staff scale their impact to serve more learners and improve outcomes in adult education. Lisa John and Joe Burgess, welcome to EdTech Insiders.
Thanks for having us, Alex, and congrats on the new baby. Welcome to the club.
Thanks. So the two of you have worked together for years at Flatiron School, which is a leading technical bootcamp provider in New York. Tell us about your experience both at Flatiron and your sort of history in EdTech and how it's shaped your understanding of the space and led you to Ribbon Education.
Yeah, of course. So I was the first person to join Flatiron School. So I'll go first and I'll hand it off to Lisa. But I joined Flatiron School in 2013. So Flatiron School was founded in New York in 2012. I joined about 8 or 9 months after they were founded as a first employee. And my job was to bring an iOS course to life. So I taught about 3 or 4 years teaching iOS programming. And then Lisa joined us when we launched our online program. And she joined as our head of product and was working on our learning platform. I mean, everything kind of digital product that Flatiron School was producing. We then got to work really closely initially, and then we got to go into kind of the pressure cooker that is hypergrowth.
Right.
Because in 2017, Flatiron School was acquired by WeWork. So if any of you have heard of WeWork, 2018 and 2019 was one of the, I think, some of the craziest professional careers in my life. I think probably yours as well, Lisa. Lisa's nodding.
Definitely.
And so we got the opportunity to go from, you know, a 70-person company we got acquired to about 600 people in about 18 months or so. And, you know, my team went from like 20 to 130 or 140, something like that. Lisa's team got huge. And that really meant that we actually liked working together, even in crazy pressure cooker where everything was breaking. Mm-hmm. And with that hypergrowth led to kind of some inspiration points. You know, first was really just the pain. We felt the pain that of scaling an online school, of going from, you know, 5-10 teachers teaching 100 students a year to, I think, about 80 teachers teaching, I don't know, 3,000 students a year, something like that. I'm not quite right on the numbers. And what that meant is all this operational need fell on the shoulders of teachers, student success professionals. It was huge. I mean, I'd talk to teachers, they would say 2 hours out of every day was admin work. And I kept getting business pressure as we grew to figure out how can we get more efficient, how can we offer more affordable programming, you know, how do we get good graduation rates? And so we felt this pain of scaling a school and were really frustrated with the software that was out there. And during the pandemic, Lisa, I really wanted to work with Lisa again. You know, I think it's very rare to find someone that you're pretty aligned with and can handle, and you still like each other after that pressure cooker.
Right.
Especially because WeWork also, you know, I think we had a successful relationship, working relationship through like the up and the down of the WeWork stuff. And yeah. During our kind of walks during the pandemic here in Brooklyn, we kind of saw some macro trends, which is that there was this more and more adult learners were in the space. And the big one was online learning, the growing appeal and comfort from everyone to be in online or hybrid learning spaces. And yet the tooling was still pretty not great. You know, my favorite stats is that there's a research study in 2021 that said 73% of students who experienced online learning in 2020 wanted there to continue to be online learning. 73%, which is a crazy number, because 2020 was a challenging year. And right. People saw what happened in 2020 and was like, yeah, I want more of that. We saw this huge macro trend, and we saw the fact that the software available for online schools was not very good, and kind of started to build Ribbon. I know, like, we see you had like a few other kind of thoughts.
Yeah, I think for me on the product side, one of the lessons that we learned at Plattern School is there's kind of this bias that we tend to all have as product managers and engineers, which is you want to build for the learners. That was always, you know, after all, they're the customers, and it feels good to see your product out in the world, your digital product. But in my experience at Plattern School, and then talking to a lot more folks who operate in schools, the thing that actually moves the needle in a lot of cases around student satisfaction and outcomes is actually empowering that student-facing staff. And I came to appreciate that student and staff relationship so much more, sometimes kind of after the fact. But in truth of the matter is most schools are way under-resourced in providing their staff with the right data and tools to support their students. That usually becomes a really heavy manual and admin burden that's placed on the people who are uniquely actually great at building those relationships. So a big personal motivation behind building Ribbon is to be more of a champion for those individuals.
Yeah, I think it's a really deep insight to realize that as online learning continues to grow, as it expands in sort of every arena, that the staff, especially the student services people who are often very much behind the scenes in some of these companies, are actually often keeping the whole ship.
They're the linchpin, yeah.
They're the linchpin. They're the first line of defense. They're the first line of support. They're the ones who are actually noticing when students are there or not, or if they're falling off track. At a Trilogy, when we were building boot camps, we noticed pretty quickly that the positive reviews of the boot camp were almost always directly about the instructor and the staff.
Exactly.
They weren't about the program. They weren't about the projects. They said, these people really had my back. They were going to make sure I got through this program. And that's why I loved it. And, you know, and they could only do that with lots of blood, sweat, and tears.
Yeah. And so we want to make sure that those folks supporting the students have that support. And that doesn't really... That kind of software and that those sort of tooling doesn't quite exist today.
Yeah, it doesn't. So as you mentioned, Joe, you know, we're in this enormous period of expansion for online learning programs at all levels, K-12 and yeah. Higher ed and adult learning, partially accelerated by the pandemic. But online learning hasn't always been greeted with open arms. There were a lot of very polarized reactions during the pandemic. Some students loved it, said, I never want to go back to a normal in-person school. And others said, I just dropped off the map. I didn't care anymore. Nobody, I was isolated and demotivated. And the difference in many cases is the support. So tell us a little bit about Ribbon's approach to how it supports the support staff, as you're saying, Lisa.
Yeah, so echoing what Lisa was mentioning is I and we and Ribbon believe that the key to delivering transformational outcomes online is all about that relationship between the school staff and the learner, right, and the student. And in a very traditional sense, that might be just a teacher to a student. In a more moderate sense, it's actually usually kind of a handful of people, right? You have a kind of a team. But all that really matters is that someone has some sort of relationship with each student. And that happens, you know, in person, that can kind of happen naturally because they're across the desk from you. They're in your classroom. But online, similar to if any of you are if you're in remote work, you have to kind of schedule and put effort behind the relationship in a way you don't have to do for in person. And so that's kind of the through line of Ribbon is, how do we make sure that you can build those relationships with students and with learners, even at scale? And so to do that, we think about this in three different ways. We help you help schools identify the learners that need support through dashboards that bring the different various learner signals, Canvas, Zoom, email, whatever, into one at-risk or on-track status dashboard. As you see, your whole class week over week, in a glance. We streamline and automate those interventions. So great, someone's at risk. What do we do about it? We make it really fast to do something about it by making kind of bulk communications with your learners easy. And then finally, we allow staff to collaborate with all their colleagues. So we make sure that there's a learner profile that every staff member can access. You can see all the communications that have happened. You can see all the disparate learner signals that come in and all the notes as well, but all in one place. So everyone's on sync. Everyone knows who needs the most support right now. And you can kind of do that support as quickly and efficiently as possible. And then I'll start to automate it as well to get the easy stuff out of the way.
Yeah, fascinating. So it's data-driven, automated, efficient, and designed for scale. I think it sounds like you both learned from Flatiron that online classes or schools can scale a lot faster than sometimes people expect. And you just need to, you know, having all these manual processes of checking attendance manually or checking whether people submitted their work manually and all these different pieces just doesn't scale. So Ribbon puts everything together. So one of the core offerings revolves around the sort of use of data. You mentioned it can pull data from Canvas, from Zoom, from different, you know, signals from emails, and then put them together into a dashboard or a platform where student service providers can see all the signals in one place. Tell us a little bit about what some of these signals are and how education providers can use that data without having to learn a whole new tool.
Sure. So as Joe mentioned, you know, we think about the product as an interconnected system with those three pillars. So data being a really core part of that, but we also want to make sure that that data is actionable. So we want to streamline and automate those interventions to act on those data insights and then make it easier for staff to collaborate with one another. And we are building sort of that like data pillar with two core product principles in mind. So first, we think data only matters in context. So there are plenty of data dashboards that give a lot of details at an individual student level or a snapshot in time. But we think it's much more useful to see how that student is doing in the context of the whole class or over a period of time. And we think that there's actually a lot more signals that go beyond what you typically get within an LMS system. So yes, we have integrations with LMSs like Canvas. We also think that for attendance, you know, now that classes are on Zoom, we want to make sure that that data is also readily available for staff. And then I think as we, being from the kind of the skills bootcamp space, we know that there is actually a lot of really modern ed tech software out there specialized, verticalized for teaching different topics. And we want to make sure that we are kind of a place that makes those types of integrations and signals about a student readily available. So data matters in context. The other thing that like we feel really strongly about is data must be actionable. So we believe that getting that data is only part of the equation. It needs to be paired with that timely intervention. So when you notice something happening, you should be able to take an action on that right away. We think a very common first line of action is to reach out to the student. So we're really focused on making sure that we can streamline and automate that first timely communication that you want to make with the student.
And with those interventions, there's so much good research that shows that timely interventions put all the metrics closer to what you want them to be, right? Graduation rates go up, satisfaction goes up, everything gets better when you can do timely interventions. And so that's also, you know, that's why we really believe that the importance of data being actionable.
It's really, really interesting. So I'm hearing that, you know, the data that Ribbon provides to teachers or student service providers is contextualized in the context of the class and the student's history or what other students are doing. And it's actionable, in some cases, even automated action, so that if somebody misses class, they might get automated emails to them, or if it's a young child, which I know is not your focus right now, to a parent, basically saying, hey, we noticed you weren't in class, or we noticed your child wasn't in class. So it sort of streamlines automates some of the manual work that a student service person would have to do. I want to sort of help our listeners picture what this would look like. So what are they actually looking at? If there's, you've just run a Zoom class and five of your 25 students were absent, what are you looking at to see that attendance chart, and how is it as easy to use and actionable as possible?
So the way staff members kind of work with Ribbon is all through Google Sheets right now. So we integrate directly with Google Sheets. We are an add-on to Google Sheets. The reason for that is we did a bunch of user research, and everyone currently solves the version of the problem we're solving in Google Sheets. So that means our interface is very simple. Our interface is something you know. You already know Google Sheets. You know how to use us. And because Google Sheets is so kind of configurable, it integrates with your reporting systems. If you do a weekly slide deck to say how the school is doing, it integrates because it's Google Sheets. So we're an add-on to Google Sheets. And the day-to-day of how someone uses us, whether it's our at-risk dashboard through Canvas data or our Zoom attendance tracker, is they pull up this Google Sheet that has their roster of students. And then you say, hey, here's the recurring Zoom meeting for my Monday class, let's say. And you say, run dashboard. And we then talk to Zoom. We get all the data and we say who was in class, how long were they in class for, who was absent, and who was late. The late status can be configured. And then you get that in kind of a grid of meeting over meeting, who was there. And so you can see over time, if a person was absent, are they always absent? Are they always late? Is this the first time they're absent? If it's the first time they're absent, it's probably fine, right? Life happens, especially with kind of non-traditional adult education. And then from there, you can then start to take actions. So you now see, hey, we have four people that were absent. You filter for all the absent folks and then hit a checkbox on all and you can then open a dialogue and send an email. Right. And that's the same deal on the Canvas side as well as at risk. Right. You say you have this huge class of 200 students and you go, oh, my gosh, 200 students. What am I going to do with that? It's just, insurmountable. Well, if you just filter by at risk, you then get down to, I don't know, hopefully it's a small number, but 20, 30 students. And then you can do another filter, which is given, the folks who are not just at risk now, but at risk last week as well. Right. And then now you're down to five. And five students, you can tackle five students today. I know you can do it. And so that's, you take those five, then you take whatever interventions you do, whether it's send them an email, send them a Slack, see you next time they're coming to an advisor meeting, whatever it is, that's what you're doing. And all of that filtering and slicing and dicing happens in Google Sheets. So it's already an interface that our users know how to use, which is, I think, is a huge benefit of the way Ribbon works.
I agree with that. We talk in our Week in EdTech podcast very often about how Google is the biggest EdTech company out there, and it's absolutely ubiquitous in classrooms at all levels. So the idea, and obviously this came out of your user research, but the idea of being able to get actionable contextualized data using interfaces and tools that you already use is I imagine it would be pretty appealing to people. So Ribbon is really focused on the adult learner, at this moment. And it's really interesting. We've seen at the higher ed level, one of the big success stories in higher ed in the recent years is the rise of what is sometimes called the mega universities, which is a group of online colleges and education providers that's serving huge numbers of often adult students, those who are over the traditional college age. These are places like Southern New Hampshire University, Western Governors, Grand Canyon, Liberty University. They each serve 100,000 students or more. So that's where they get this idea of mega university. And, one thing that is common among all of these universities is they need to invest very heavily in student services. They have very close relationships and big armies of student service providers to make sure that their non-traditional learners are actually able to accomplish what they came to accomplish online and to keep these student bodies engaged. I'd love to hear you talk about how Ribbon might be a really interesting complement to these models. And what is the relationship between Ribbon and this type of adult learning model?
Yeah, as Lisa mentioned, we did a lot of user research because we wanted to make sure, I know this is a problem that we saw, and this is a problem that our friends saw, but we wanted to make sure it was a problem that everyone had. And so we talked to, I think, all the universities you listed, folks who were directors of student services and, all over various different roles within those organizations. And what's happening is they all have a version of this. Often it's maybe a little bit crude and maybe, not the best experience and obviously a lot of holes to it, but they've recognized this problem at their scale and have invested millions and millions, tens of millions of dollars and years and years and years and years I think one or two of them, like over a decade, into solving this problem with software. And so we saw that, we thought, okay, well, you know, how does that apply to a lot of our target, which is not always going to be the mega giant universities. But really, when we think about the 100,000 student school, it's actually kind of 52,000 person schools, right? And so the 100,000 person school is at the scale that if you bunch all those together, they have enough money to spend $30 million on a custom solution. But it's still useful even at that sub school level where, you know, the English literature, some sub thing is actually only teaching 1,000 students or 2,000 students a year. And so these big institutions, bigs have the scale to make that possible. Yet every size of school needs this software. And so we said, all right, let's make it so that everyone can be and operate at the same level of efficiency. And hopefully, actually, because we're bringing in so many different opinions and different ways, and we're such a dedicated team on just this one problem, let's do it better than even the largest universities. And so how cool would it be to be a school that teaches 2,000 or 3,000 students a year, 1,000 or even 500, and to have a more scaled, more efficient student services team than even the biggest and most established players? That's what we want to enable for our customers and kind of how we think about where we kind of sit, I guess, in that space.
That's really compelling. And you know, it's interesting to hear that and makes sense. I think it's validating that each of these types of universities that's serving large numbers of online adult students has a solution to this. And it Yep. sounds like they have sort of bespoke solutions, maybe patchwork solutions. There's clearly no one player that they're all using because it's sort of the group out there.
Yeah, it's all custom.
Yeah, it's all custom. It's maybe built in-house or whatever it is. The reason I mention them is that these are, I think, some of the schools that have waded into this complex water earlier than others. And now we're in a moment where every university and every department is suddenly saying, oh, wow, now we have so many more online students than we used to. What are we going to do here? How do we, you know, people are disappearing. They're not showing up for class. They're not doing their homework. We don't know how to deal with this. And they have a lot less tenure than some of these big universities that have had years to think about it.
Yeah.
Well, so outside of the mega universities, as you mentioned, Joe, we're seeing many traditional universities or smaller universities start to sort of try some new strategies. There are a lot of reports out now about how colleges are facing declining enrollments. There are fewer high school graduates. People are questioning some of the ROI, and the age of university learners is tending to go up. Universities are looking to attract more adult learners. They're trying to ensure they're giving students what they really need. And a lot of things are moving online because for a variety of reasons, including the pandemic, but also just flexibility and attracting working learners. So I'd love to hear your take on student services for that, you know, large pack of universities that are changing to a sort of online first, adult first strategy.
Yeah. And, you know, like you said, Alex, like working learners are a very different breed of students. They have competing priorities on their time and their resources. Education may or may not be their primary focus. So student services and that support should look very different for them. I think student services are the true quarterbacks for the whole educational experience. But really, we think that these teams currently lack the tooling to really take advantage of the shift to online. So in theory, being online should mean that we can actually streamline and automate much of the data gathering and communication bits that take up much of like an advisor's time. Instead, I think that time can be reallocated to more high value work, like building those human relationships, connecting with the learners, diagnosing the issues, and really kind of problem solving with that adult learner and figuring out like what in their life needs to be adjusted to make this kind of program and educational experience work for them. And I think that level of flexibility, that sort of like conversation and negotiation of where education fits in, is a human interaction. It's a very student services role that goes beyond just thinking about the academic. It's the whole student, the whole learner's experience.
I love that emphasis on keeping the relationship front and center. I think one of the interesting through lines of all of EdTech is to use technology to automate the work that is automatable, that is non-human, like emailing somebody when they miss class, but then what's in that email? how it's written, what it's for, and, you know, knowing that you have a person on the other side of it who really cares about you, only a human can do that. So I think it's a really interesting mm-hmm. balance that you're trying to strike here, where you have true relationships, people who care that you are there, but automate and use technology to give them the time to actually build those relationships rather than all of these administrative tasks.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's all listeners to this podcast know that, you know, we talk about higher education, but there's a really big growth in alternative pathways for education out there. And that's part of why higher education is sort of under fire. Ryan Craig, in his book, New You, dubs these the sort of faster and cheaper options. In the past, this would have meant things like associate's degrees or community college that take, you know, 2 years rather than four. But in 2022, there's a huge variety of options. These are bootcamp providers like Flatiron School, you are both alum of, and many, many other bootcamp providers, online certificate programs, apprenticeship programs. We talked to Multiverse on the podcast recently, public-private partnerships, corporate education. I mean, there are so many different things. AWS certification, Guild Education offers, you know, employees at Walmart and Disney, you know, online degrees as part of their tuition. But then those are, you know, students who need student support. How do you see the role of Ribbon and, you know, the difference between traditional higher ed and the student services need for some of these alternative pathway providers?
The one thing, I mean, I love alternative pathway providers. I joined one in 2013. You know, I rode that wave. I'm on board. I want to see all of those Guild Education, Multiverse. We worked with Multiverse back when they were called White Hat. Like, I'm on board. I love them. But one thing that I've always wanted to, like, kind of separate out a bit is there's the provider. So Flatiron School is an alternative education provider. And then there's the product you're delivering. And it turns out that a traditional higher ed providers also can deliver alternative education products.
Great point.
All kinds of schools do that. You know, sometimes they use tools like Trilogy to be able to provide. You know, I remember Columbia has, I think, a bootcamp that's offered through Trilogy. I mean, a bunch of schools do it. And so what I think is kind of more interesting dynamic to look at is traditional higher ed products and alternative education products. Whoever, I don't care who makes them, I do care, but, like, you know, either way it's fine. In the same way that I want an electric car, it doesn't have to be from Tesla, it could be from Honda. And the way that I've always kind of thought about these products is a little back to what Lisa said before, which is usually these alternative education products are targeting somewhat of a non-traditional student. I don't know how old they are. They're usually adults, over 18. There's also plenty of exciting alternative education happening in K-12, happening all over the place. But it's usually a slightly different student. As Lisa said, where learning isn't their number one priority. And the other kind of factor that we saw over and over and over at Flatiron School is sometimes they're not seasoned students. I think, especially probably in the edtech landscape, a lot of people in edtech probably were pretty good students in, like, school. But a lot of the students we saw in these alternative education products are non-traditional students, education not their number one priority, and they're just haven't been a student in a while. They spent most of their past 5-10 years in a career. And when you're working at a job, it is your job to get it right. Right? No one pays you. You're not doing a good job if you're getting it wrong day in, day out. But when you're a student, it's your job to get it wrong day in, day out. The second you get it right, move on to the next time. Right. Don't spend any time in the world in which you're getting it right. And so what needs to happen is the student support needs to be focused much more on how to be a student, how to kind of normalize that emotional weight of just being wrong all the time. Mm-hmm. You need to work with them to build accountability, because usually these alternative education products are much more flexible. Right. So it's not just this, like, boom, 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 Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. It's, you know, get this done this month. And we all know that deadlines, you know, are great. I don't know if we all know that, but I hope everyone knows deadlines are great. And it's part of student success to kind of deliver those deadlines, help people create them for themselves, help people create a structure around their learning experience that is productive in this kind of weird education experience that either they haven't done in 15, 20, 30 years, or doesn't look like their last education experience and they're in high school. Every school does it differently, but I think those are the framing under which student success has to change.
I love this point. And, you know, there's some really interesting literature, and it's older literature now, about this concept of orientations for online students. There's this understanding and lots of research behind it that when people are becoming a student, as you mentioned, for the first time in years or in a new context, they just don't know how to do it. There's a time management issues, there's communication issues, there's technology issues. There's so many different things that you sort of have to learn just to get the baseline of being able to keep up with a different kind of program. So I really like that the way you frame it as differentiating. It's really not about the provider itself. It's about the product. It's about, you know, are you signing up for a 1 week boot camp in person where they're going to, you know, take attendance every day and there's all sorts of accountability, or a 3 year online, you know, MBA where where all the deadlines are shifting and you have to turn your whole life around to make it work and you have kids and, you know, jobs. They're really very different. And you're right, they're both provided by different types of institutions. So that idea of structure and accountability and orientation and sort of making sense of an online learning environment is so important. I really, really appreciate that answer.
And it also ends up being more individualized because each student looks so different. When you're traditional, I mean, when I went to college and I was 19, we all lived within an hour of school. I went to a live on campus. I wasn't a commuter school, and we all kind of look similar. So I think it's easier for them to bucket people into a few buckets. Once you get alternative education products, there's significantly more buckets under which people your students are sitting in.
Absolutely. And it's really interesting to sort of think about this concept of timely interventions, as you mentioned earlier, in that context, because the flexibility, the very thing that makes education appealing to working learners, as you mentioned, Lisa, they have all sorts of competing priorities, is the flexibility. They have, I think it's Capella University has this thing called the Flex Path, and it's all about how flexible, how you can do it at your own pace. Of course, that's what people want. But as soon as you go to your own pace, the onus goes on the student to get things done, and they need all sorts of wraparound supports.
And graduation rates plummet.
Exactly. And I think some of these universities who have long tenure in this includes, you know, Open University in the UK, or, you know, people who have done online learning for a long time ended up investing more and more and more in exactly the type of student services and custom tools that allow the relationships to be built. It's really, really compelling. So I have to ask, you have both met and worked at Flatiron School. Lisa, you also have worked in some pretty big tech companies when it comes to education. You led remote learning at Facebook/Meta. You've worked for years at Google with the Google Hangouts product. These are two tech companies that have huge outsized influence on the ed tech space. We already mentioned how Google is arguably the biggest ed tech company in the world. We've recently reported on Amazon just launched an online course section of its site and has, you know, a lot of fingers in the education space in various ways. And Microsoft is also a sort of dark horse in the ed tech world. They obviously bought LinkedIn Learning, which had bought Lynda. They have Blizzard Entertainment, which is a sort of metaverse play, and all sorts of other things, Minecraft EDU. So as a startup, Ribbon, looking to break into the space, but with some big tech DNA in your background, I'd love to hear you talk about sort of the advantages and disadvantages of big tech and ed tech starting to have some convergence.
Yeah, you're so right, Alex, that, you know, certainly big tech and the companies that I've been involved in definitely want to be in education. I think the advantages of them being in this space is, you know, they can devote a lot of resources and direct a lot of talented people to tackling real problems in education. I think I'm optimistic that they have people and are devoting resources to solving those in a real substantial way. Another, I think, a real advantage, which we talked about earlier, is the usability, the ease of use. They are building and able to build a consumer grade product that comes with it a lot of familiarity and comfort to using those products. And so when they build in this space, that means that adoption can be better. And if, you know, if it is a truly useful tool, like some of the Google products that I used to work with, like they are truly beneficial, you have faster learning curves and easier adoption paths to getting real value out of them. Of course, there are disadvantages. Often these companies go into the education space intentionally as a loss leader. You know, you see this model over and over again. They provide a free offering because they see value in getting a certain type of user onto the platform early. And they kind of kick the can down the road of like, how will they monetize? I think they have a number of ideas in mind. But the main thing that I would emphasize there is that makes it really hard for a EdTech upstart to really compete. You know, it's really hard to compete with free. And so what happens is like when you build something and it's not free and you're charging for it, but there is this alternative that's free, this incentivizes people to get in this space, right? And so over time, that could result in a less innovation in the space. And that would be a disappointing outcome if folks were not tackling these bigger issues in different ways.
That's a terrific answer. Really, really thoughtful. You mentioned how Ribbon is at least starting in a place where it's connecting big tech players like Zoom and Canvas, and which is made by Instructure and Google Sheets, and taking the sort of very wide adoption of these types of tools and then building really specialized and very, very useful tooling on top of them. I'd love to hear you talk about how that dynamic works. Do you think that's a strategy that could be pursued by other startups where they actually can build on top of Zoom? We've seen things like Class Technologies do that, build using the install base of these massive consumer grade products, but then using them for very specialized education use cases.
I think so. I mean, our DNA and the kind of first iteration of our product is really with that in mind. We want to be where the teachers and staff already are. And if that is enabling them to save time, get more of that mindshare back to doing their core job, I think that's a great thing. I think like our focus is really like, where does the value live? And if it is on top of being part of some of these big platforms, I think that's okay.
Whenever you're a young company, you're always limited by how much, you know, engineering effort and how much effort you can put into the product, and you're limited by distribution, right? That's your two things, is developing a better product and distribution. And so by building on top of an existing thing like Google Sheets, you can kind of outsource the areas where you're not innovating to someone else. That builds familiarity, which is amazing. It means our users can use our software faster. And on the distribution side, by building on top of a thing that already has distribution via the Zoom marketplace or Google Apps marketplace, you then solve some of your distribution problems. So just as a business, it's also kind of a compelling option.
Yeah. And maybe in an ideal world, it also sort of flips that loss leader issue that you are mentioning, Lisa, that, you know, Google offers classrooms and so much of its suite for free. It gets huge adoption. They don't really do get a whole lot of money out of it, although they do it at times. But it also ideally allows the whole ecosystem of apps and startups to be able to then have a channel into the education system, which is sometimes hard to break into. So it's an interesting and complex ecosystem. I'm always fascinated by how all the different players work in this, and even why all these big tech companies have their eye on schools and education, but they certainly do, and we're seeing it more and more.
Absolutely.
So, you know, Ribbon Education just is a really exciting project. And I think any listeners who are listening today who have any relationship to student services, that could be universities, that could be alternative providers, even individual course providers, I really recommend that they check it out. And we're going to put all the links to the Ribbon site, as well as the blog and other resources in the show notes. I wish we had more time, but to wrap up the interview today, you know, we always ask, what is the most exciting trend that you see in the EdTech landscape right now? You both keep your eye really close to it, that you think our listeners should keep an eye on.
Mine is really about the rise of alternative education. Where we are now is honestly kind of where I thought we'd be in 2016, 2017. I was a bit eager, but it turns out it took longer, right? And the pandemic probably also accelerated things, which is that the demand for traditional education is starting to falter and decrease. But what I actually believe is that the demand for adult education has not gone down. It's just that some traditional providers aren't delivering the right product. And so with that comes a lot of innovation and excitement. And I'm really thrilled to see what happens when students are considering things besides traditional four-year degrees or two-year degrees. Micro-credential, I mean, you went through the list, all the different options, other ways that you can kind of continue your learning. I think we're finally starting to see a little bit of that tipping point happen.
Agreed. It is really exciting. How about you, Lisa? What is a trend that you think that our listeners should keep an eye on?
Yeah, I mean, it's been really fascinating, I'm sure for you too, Alex, the past couple of weeks with the disruption in the OPM business. So, you know, between the 2U business model changes and the University of Arizona's acquisition of Zovio, I think we're just really actually seeing the beginnings of kind of the unbundling of OPM services, which I'm keeping a close eye on because I think it does create a lot of new opportunities for both ed tech startups as well as traditional universities and colleges to think through, you know, where do they sit in that unbundling?
Yeah, it's a terrific point. I think, you know, that whole space has sort of changed so much that the models that we used to see in OPM where it's like, you have a partnership, lots of money up front, it's going to take years to recoup. The OPM partner does everything, all the marketing, all the instructional design, and it's this sort of like two giants coming together. It just feels like those days are kind of over, or they're just about to be over.
The OPM space is definitely going to look very different in 5 years, 2 years even, maybe.
Agreed. And what is one resource? It can be a book, a blog, a Twitter feed that you would recommend for somebody who wants to dive deeper into the topics we discussed today.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of Phil Hill and Michael Feldstein, which I know, Alex, you follow them as well. I just appreciate how deep they go in their analysis and really hold ed tech companies and universities accountable. And so I definitely follow those two for a lot of my news sources.
I also follow Phil and Michael and, you know, get all the newsletters and all the various places they're writing. But another one I really liked recently is Robert Ubel. I think I'm saying his last name correctly. And he's the ex-vice president of online learning for NYU's engineering school. And he has two books. They're both collections of essays, which is really digestible. I can read, you know, one little essay in 20 minutes and then put it down and go on with my day instead of a big, long, giant, multi-chapter book. And then also, you know, this is kind of a weird one. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but I mean, they're talking to the folks from there when we're doing initial stuff. And a lot of things, they're trying to bring a lot of the same relationship focus, getting out of lectures and into small workshops and one-on-ones, but they're just focused on K-12. I think a lot of what they're doing actually does apply to kind of the adult online learning space, even if they have to do some translation between how they convey and how it works for adults. And then, of course, you know, I can't leave this section without talking about us. We have one thing that Lisa and I mean, we're always frustrated with in 2018, 2017, was that we felt like we're recreating the wheel every day. Like someone else must have figured out a better way to survey students and get better NPS results or CSATs or whatever. And there was nothing there built for adult learners, especially online adult learners, right? We'd do research on how to manage a classroom and they would talk about 10 different spelling exercises for 10-year-olds, right? And so we built what we wish we had. So we have a blog on our website, our learner success blog, which is focused on resources for those in the online adult learning space, especially alternative education. And then we also have a community called the Learner Success Guild. And this community is about operators in the alternative education space. And remember, alternative education products that can work for traditional school, that's fine, as long as the product they're delivering is an alternative education product. And then there we do kind of private events. We have a mailing list where people can ask questions. You know, one person was asking, hey, how have you guys, our Zoom prices are getting really expensive and they're trying to bill us for this other thing. How have you handled that? And someone else responded, said, hey, here's how we handled that. And it's great just to talk to like-minded people who are all solving similar problems. So that's our blog and Learner Success Guild are two resources I think are great. We're building it as best as we can. We're open for more feedback on better ways to build it. And it's been a lot. It's so far, I think, actually been my favorite part has been the Learner Success Guild of because I just get to build something that we wish we get to build something that we wish we had. And Lisa's really been spearheading that.
That's fantastic. And I will testify that throughout my career, the student success professionals are some of the most, not only the nicest, but some of the most creative, thoughtful, relationship oriented, helpful people you'll ever meet. And I think a community of them would be about the best place to be online. So I will definitely link to the Learner Success blog and the guild run by Ribbon Education. Anybody in that space, or if you know anybody in that space, please, please pile in, because I think that's it's an amazing group that does not get enough chance to share ideas.
Thank you.
Thanks, Alex.
Lisa. Yeah, of course. Lisa, John, and Joe Burgess, this has been an awesome conversation. I love this focus on student success, keeping the humanity in the adult learning online space, but automating the tasks. It's really exciting. Thank you so much for being here with me at EdTech Insiders.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the EdTech Insiders podcast. If you liked the episode, remember to subscribe on Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're listening on Apple, please leave a rating and review so others can find the podcast. For more EdTech Insiders content, subscribe to the EdTech Insiders newsletter at edtechinsiders.substack.com.